I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode, this raging episode of Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are witnessing the worm turning, the tables being turned, the old switcheroo, as they say. And what am I referring to? Of course, I'm referring to the glimpses of potential justice that we are starting to see as we see the Attorney General's office is beginning to look at what happened in the 2016 elections through the prism of the reality that crimes were committed by those who were trying to mold the election, to make it come out the way they wanted, to get Hillary Clinton elected at all costs. We saw the Democrat Party had no problem pushing old Bernie out of the way and setting up, through their rules. Granted, they did it through their rules, but they certainly set it up so that a specific winner will come out. It's not the will of the people. You know, you fools get to push buttons and vote, but your vote doesn't really count. Our rules actually count, but that's all right. So we saw that they were manipulating the election that way to get Hillary the nomination, figuring she would be the coronated one. And then we saw the attacks on Donald Trump. Now, first of all, I have to say, as we get closer to this election, I look back on the last one and I remember with joy and with glee the egg on the face of all of these idiot newspaper people and reporters on TV that, oh, no way Trump would ever be the president. Oh, he's never going to be president. These actors, Trump, you're not going to be the president, right? About 3 o'clock in the morning on election day, they changed their tune, right? The tables turned, the worm turned, so to speak. Well, we're starting to see that again with this investigation by the Attorney General, General Barr, who, you know, and you all know that listen to Chasing Justice, that I am skeptical of what he's going to do, that even though there's an investigation, and, you know, they'll come up with, you know, who did what, I'm skeptical that they're actually going to go after anyone, because we know they got Comey on a couple of things right off the bat that are criminal, and they declined to prosecute. Now, they have a bigger, maybe investigative scheme, but for all my brother and sister law enforcement people out there that conducted large-scale investigations, you know, you would think you get the bit players, you get the big players, whatever you can get them with. If they did it and you can charge them, you charge them, because it only helps you out in the end. When you're putting your case together, you can dismiss certain charges in favor of pleas and other things. But we saw that, you know, we're not seeing this charge to go after him. But as we look, we're seeing that the Inspector General Horowitz, his report on the FISA abuses, that apparently that's very close to coming out now. Now, we heard it was going to be 2 weeks ago, then a week, and, you know, and then all these intelligence people are getting together saying, you can't release this, you can't release that. But I think it's going to come out. I think it's getting to the point where the report's going to come out. And everything we're hearing, we're all hearing rumor. You're hearing rumor now from Lieutenant Joe, because I'm hearing it from other people that are saying it's damning. The report is damning. I don't know. We talked about this in a previous episode where there were 588 violations of rules and regulations and everything with Hillary Clinton's emails, yet they only managed to find 47 incidents where maybe they could hold somebody accountable. So I'm afraid, and I've said it all along, that this could happen again. But let's take a look at this. We're gonna go into that a little bit. You know, the worm turning and what they're doing. As I go through, you know, these daily events, and we're watching these things, they're changing hour by hour. Because one of the things we're going to find, and here's how an investigation goes. Now they've announced that this is now criminal. And you're watching the media trip over themselves, especially the crazy left-wing media, you know, the CNNs and the MSNBC people, when they're interviewing each other now, you know, their echo chambers. Well, why would they turn this into a criminal investigation? I mean, Trump's the one who did things wrong. You know, why is this a criminal investigation? You know, like they're completely dumbfounded that all along they had no idea what was actually going on. Now, you could imagine that some of them are really just Kool-Aid drinkers and they really believe with their heart and soul that there was nothing other than Trump collusion to this. But when we look at other situations, we say, are they really just that stupid that they didn't understand what was going on? You know, I see as a poll now, 49% of Americans don't want Trump impeached and removed, and 49% do. So that leaves that 2% in the middle. You don't remove a president simply because you don't like his policies, because you don't like the ugly words he says. You don't remove a president from office using the power of the Congress and the power of the impeachment tool that they have simply because you don't like him, you didn't win the election, and now you're in charge. So you're going to keep searching until you find something to impeach him for, and then do it. That is so blatantly un-American. That is so antithetical to what we're supposed to be about. Not only that, it really damages you and me. You know, the real people that go to work every day, because in the meantime, they could be working on the healthcare problem, you know, for people that don't have it. Instead of talking about all-encompassing government healthcare that's going to socialize our medicine and ruin it, maybe come up with a plan for the people who don't have healthcare that they can get on some kind of a program that we create that helps them to have some insurance so that everyone has insurance. Not that we all have to have one-size insurance that doesn't work for everyone. Maybe they can work on the tax code and figure out, gee, let's see, Trump cut the taxes on businesses and corporations, and what did those corporations do? They responded by hiring people. Now people got jobs. You know, a lot of rich guys made a lot of money in his tax cuts. And what did they do? They invested a lot of that money into their businesses, into other ventures, and then people got hired. Right now, there's about 1 million jobs going unanswered in America. That people, there's not enough people to take the jobs. And they're good jobs. That's a great place to be in as a person who works, because you can choose to do something better. So these things are all what's going on in the background of this. But in the meantime, instead of our Congress working to fix, can we remove? You know, what can we do with our new fuel independence? You know, we want to work on, some non-fossil fuel-based energy system. We could put money into that, couldn't we? Let's figure it out. Maybe there's something else out there that will combust and work like, fuel oil. So that we can maybe wean ourselves off of this eventually. But we can't do it until we have a new kind of fuel. You know, you're not going to put a windmill on top of a 747 and fly to Ireland. It's not going to happen. You have to have some legitimate alternative type of fuel. Is there something out there? I don't know. Maybe they could be working on that. That's something that I would say we should invest in that and figure that out through private companies. You know, put a big bounty on it, and a company that figure out how to make a fuel gets $1 billion. And let the private economy, entrepreneurs, the geniuses we have here, let them start doing genius stuff and figure out if there is another way to make another kind of fuel, right, to remove us from all those things. So I'm looking at that. I'm going down the road here, and of course I look at Mr. Schiff and I think about the things he says. Meghan McCain. You know, part of me is so caught up with, trying to understand my relationship to John McCain, the man, John McCain, the politician, and John McCain, the war hero, that when you hear, you know, Meghan McCain saying things, you want to be angry, you want to be upset, or you want to buy into it. But she's saying that, you know, the GOP will be a very dark place after Donald Trump leaves. No, I don't think it will. I think, you know, if any of the smart GOP Republicans that are good men and women that are out there paying attention, maybe they'll understand that you don't have to sit back like a little nothing in a corner and cower every time the Democrats talk. Maybe you can stand up and take the fight to them, and maybe you can win. Maybe we could play offense for a change instead of always playing defense. And I think that's what Trump should be teaching them. All right? Senator Cruz, all right, are you getting the idea? Senator Graham, are you getting the idea? You stand up and you throw punches. You don't sit back and cower. When you want to lead, you get out front and lead. And you take the hits and you keep on pushing. This is what Trump should have taught the GOP. So I don't think it should be in a dark place when he goes. It should be prepared to take the mantle from the guy and say, hey, we learned a lot of lessons from this guy who showed up here and blazed this new trail of what a fighter should be, of what a new modern forefather should be for freedom and liberty and justice. Because that's who the guy's been. Potty mouth and all, you know, tweets and all, nonsensical statements once in a while and all, he's been a newborn founding father who is looking at liberty and justice, and he's trying to forge ahead with a greater America for everybody. I don't see him cutting anybody out because I've been looking for it. Who's he cutting out? You want to work? There's a million jobs. Go get one of them jobs. You want to go to school? Go to school. Get educated. Right? You want to do the right thing? Do the right thing. And you can get ahead too. You could take care of your family. You too can have a great life. So it's interesting to see where these things are going. But I just keep looking, you know, looking through the news feeds as I'm watching these things. You see that a judge now has ordered the Department of Justice to give over the Mueller grand jury evidence. The Mueller grand jury evidence, which, you know, grand jury testimony is supposed to be secret and private. For a purpose, for a reason. And now for this judge, and of course, the first thing we have to think about is that, is the judge doing the right judicial thing? Is the judge doing the appropriate legal thing to handle this? Or is this judge politically motivated, using his position to move his political opinion forward? Is he some left-wing nut that's like, oh no, you give over that grand jury testimony because there could be something in there that Adam Schiff could twist. He could tie it into a little knot and make something out of it that's not there, so you're going to give it to them. So grand jury testimony should remain secret, and it should remain under wraps, because the argument that the Congress will get it and they will review it, you know, with the sacred reverence that it deserves, we all know is BS. We all know all of that stuff's going to be leaked out almost immediately. If there's anything in there, you know, Trump used to pull the labels off of mattresses back in his hotels. You know, if he did that, that's going to come out if that's in the testimony. So whatever it is, we know it's going to be misused and it's going to be inappropriate. And that's one of the reasons that it should not come out. You know, you have enough evidence right now to figure out if the guy did something wrong or not. So we're playing with our thoughts and our heads as we go round and round with that nonsense. All right, so these are some of the things that we want to talk about. This investigation is very interesting. I'm listening to various reports of, you know, what is going to come out. And I listened to, I think it was James Clapper, was on a news program. And James Clapper is normally a loudmouth, a very self-confident guy that he got the world by the guts because he knows none of the stuff's going to come out. So he can say whatever he wants. He knows the press is going to back him up. They're going to cover him left and right. But put the brakes on. A criminal investigation has started. And I heard him on this program, and he says, talking to whoever the interviewer was, some left-wing blockhead, he's talking to him, and he says, well, I guess I'm one of the people being investigated, and you should have heard this guy stammering all over the place. His cocksure attitude kind of disappeared a little bit. So I guess the reality is, as an investigation goes, once it gets started, a real criminal investigation, what you look to do is pick off some of the smaller players. And then you want to see how much jail time are these smaller players willing to do for the people at the top of the heap? Are we willing to do 5 years or 10 years in federal prison so that James Clapper doesn't have to do jail time, or so that we don't involve any of these political people, so that we don't drag them down? We're willing to, you know, jump on the sword for these people. Is that what people are willing to do? And in most cases, cases of human endeavor, when you finally come to somebody and say, hey, you're under indictment, we're taking you to trial and we're going to try you and you're going to do 5 to 10 years in prison, unless, of course, you have some information that can help us with our greater investigation. And that's how that works. That's how you get an informant. That's how you get someone to work with you. You offer them some kind of a deal. You know, maybe instead of 5 years in prison, you tell us what you know, who did what, and, you know, maybe you get probation. You know, maybe you'll have to report to a probation officer for a couple of years as opposed to going to federal prison and fighting for your life for 5 years. Maybe that would be interesting to you instead of that. So that's where you'll see people will start to come forward, and suddenly the information that you get will become more and more not about Trump, but about what all these people did. There is tons of information that still has not come out. We all know that. We don't even have the IG's report. But there's other information. There's lots more text messages. Comey said, they accidentally deleted 50,000 text messages from these guys. Isn't that convenient that the 50,000 text messages, were accidentally deleted? Now, imagine if you were under investigation, you got a company and they say, hey, listen, bring all your text messages, your emails and everything and bring it to the office. We're going to investigate. Oh, you accidentally deleted it? Oh, all right. Well, that's really a bummer. Or you purposely, well, you know what? I went through those 50,000 and most of them were about my kids' skateboarding class. And my wife and I, our vacation we were planning. So I just deleted all those and got rid of them. Here's the 12 that I think you need. Oh, that sounds a lot like the Hillary situation, right? So we keep coming back to that because it is such an injustice. It's an injustice for all of us. But we're starting to see that the worm apparently has turned here. And now there is a criminal investigation started. Now, that's hopeful, I think. I'm still not confident that people will be brought to justice. But I think at least it'll be better than, just doing an inquiry and saying nothing happened. Now, it's a criminal investigation. If we see any of these people arrested, it would probably shake up the rest of them. And then they'll all start pointing fingers at each other because that's what people like this do. Somebody who didn't do anything, you could say whatever you want. You can indict what you want. There's nothing for me to tell you unless you want me to make something up and see. And that happens too. So we're seeing with General Flynn, we're seeing his attorneys now are saying the whole thing that Comey and the FBI did to General Flynn was totally and completely inappropriate. No justice was served there at all. I know as a cop, as a detective, if I bring you into my police headquarters and I'm going to ask you stuff potentially that could be criminal, I have to advise you of your Miranda rights. If I'm hunting around something criminal and I think you're involved, I have to advise you of your rights. If I just say, oh, listen, no, Bob, come on in. It's nothing. No, we're not looking at anything criminal. We're kind of pals here. You know what I mean? You're over there. You're a military guy and I'm an FBI guy. We just want to talk. We just want to talk and, get your opinions on some things. See what you think. You do that and you are absolutely subverting justice. You're not giving justice to that man. Now, whether you agree with the man or not, doesn't make a difference because any one of us could be in that seat. And I'm telling you, the cops can easily trick people into thinking it's no big deal. It's no big deal. I could do that every single day of the week because people come to your place of interview. They come in scared to death. They don't know what to think. And if you make it like it's no big deal and tell them it's no big deal, it's not really criminal, we just want your opinion, thank you so much for coming in, let's just have a freewheeling discussion. Let's talk about things. People will let their guard down and they will start telling you things. Then you turn around and take those things and use it against them when they didn't know it was a criminal investigation. And then we're finding out that the 302s, which are FBI jargon, that's the name of a report. These are reports of these interviews. They may have been changed. People may have changed a sentence, a meaning, a word to make Flynn look guilty. Can you imagine? This is our FBI who did that? Where's Mr. Ray, right? The Attorney General has to look into these things. If these people did this, they have to be charged. They have to be removed or there's no justice for any of us. And on that thought, we'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice with round two. We got some fun stuff to talk about when I get back, like brand new little babies and wonderful things going on and out in the world. We'll get back to the rough and tumble of politics, but we'll be back in a minute with some fun stuff.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You know, I was just saying to myself, I love talking to everybody on Twitter. You know, I didn't do Twitter for a long time, and I got into it recently, and a lot of you have jumped on and followed me. I followed you back, and I think it's a great way to say something when you're feeling it. You know, you throw it out there, and people comment on it, and I read what you say, and people say things, and I comment on it, and it's a good connection. You know, I do kind of like it. There are a lot of people say weird things, too, you know, of course, but I guess sometimes there's somebody out there thinking something I say is weird. I guess that could be true, too. But I like to go through, you know, the Twitter and like to see who's out there. Let's see. Curtis Golden, how are you, Curtis? Thank you for following and for listening. Lucy Fox, how are you, Lucy? I'm glad you're out there. She's got a really cool handle. You should take a look at everybody on here. Let's see. Of course, Malcolm Out Loud is on there. Patrick 32068. How you doing, Pat? Thanks for jumping on board. That's really cool. Chinaro, not a liberal. I like that one. Chinaro, not a liberal. And then, of course, remember, Ava Armstrong. Ava Armstrong is out there, and she is an unbelievably awesome woman. Great writer, awesome books. Look her up. Listen to her shows. On America Out Loud, listen to Lieutenant Randy, listen to people here on the Dial Viewpoint, Voice of a Nation. Really a lot of fun to be here and be a part of everything with everybody. So, at the end of round one, you know, we talked our politics and, you know, it gets you sick to your stomach with what these people are doing to our country. Wouldn't it be nice if we had something nice to talk about? Well, I do. I just became a grandfather. That's right. Me, Lieutenant Joe. Who would ever think that I would be a grandfather? I got to tell you, I never thought I would see the day I would be a grandfather. I love my kids. You know, I have wonderful children, and my oldest, Joe, he's our attorney of record here. He comes on, he does the disorder in the court segments with me. Joe is a tremendous young man. He married a beautiful young woman, Adeline, and they just gave birth to their first child, the beautiful and sweet and gorgeous and wonderful little Annalisa Grace. That's right. Isn't that a beautiful name? Annalisa Grace. I love that name. It was funny because Joe and Addie decided they did not want to know if it was a boy or girl until the moment the child was born. Now, around here, we had to adapt to that. Now, a lot of people like that. I know when Joe was born, we didn't know till he was born, you know, boy or girl. But my other children, we knew each one because the reality, I only wanted to paint the room one time. I didn't want to have to paint it two different colors. So after the first baby, the rest of the babies, I wanted to know, this is boy or girl, which color am I painting the room? All right. But Joe and Addie didn't want to know. And everybody went along with that because it's their baby. And okay, it'll be exciting. We'll find out when the baby's born. So along the way, you got to have something to call this baby. You know, a little baby boy, little baby, what are you going to call it? So they decided that they would call the baby Thumper, T-H-U-M-P-E-R, Thumper. You know, like baby the rabbit, Thumper, from back in the day, from the Disney movies. So we were calling little baby Thumper, and you didn't know if Thumper was going to be a boy or a girl, and it was fun for, you know, a long time around here. Well, my father-in-law Ted, who is an avid listener to Chasing Justice, Ted... He couldn't really hear very well, and he thought we were saying Trumper, baby Trumper, because everybody here is a Trump fan. And he thought, instead of saying Thumper, he thought they were saying Trumper, baby Trumper. So we didn't realize that until very recently. He was sending a video message to somebody, to one of the kids, and he goes, well, it'll be fun to see baby Trumper. And they said, Pop, it's not Trumper, it's Thumper. He goes, no, it's Trumper. You know, we like Trump, so it's Trumper. So it was just really funny that he was calling the baby Trumper this whole time, and it was actually baby Thumper. So here's the scene. So my wife and I, Kathy and I, we go to the hospital early in the morning because the, you know, baby's going to be born at a specific time. So we go there, and we get ourselves all set. We got our coffee. We get into the waiting room. Adeline's father is there. Her aunt and her uncle are there. And we're waiting and we're excited to see what's going to go on. And all of a sudden, in the hallway, we see my son and daughter-in-law, and they're all dressed in the, you know, the hospital gowns with the head thing on to go into surgery, and they're walking. You know, they're not on, like, she's not on a gurney or anything. And they're walking, and they stop, and they wave into the family room. Well, we went out, and we took a bunch of pictures. And then here comes the doctor and the doctor team, and they all come out and gathered around. It was really a beautiful, wonderful event. And then we wished them luck, and they walked off into the operating room where they were going to do the operation and get the baby. And, you know, now we're waiting. So here we are. We're all sitting around in this waiting room. And we're, you know, what's it going to be? And who's it? Everybody's guessing. Well, let me tell you something. First of all, Pop Joe, that would be me, Pop Lieutenant Joe. I named it legitimately when we first found out. I said baby girl. I said baby girl. Now, the reason I said baby girl is because I had a dream one night. I don't know, maybe after Addie was pregnant for a month or two. I had a dream one night that I saw my son and my daughter-in-law, and they're walking through a park on a beautiful day, and they're holding hands with this beautiful little baby girl in this cute, gorgeous little green frilly dress. And the baby could have been like 2 years old, 2.5 years old. And she turns around and she smiles, and she had this cute little red hair, and my heart just melted. And from that moment on, I said, oh my God, they're having a little red-headed baby girl that is going to melt my heart and wrap me around her finger. Well, you know what? I was right. Lieutenant Joe was right. So there we are sitting in the family waiting room, and everybody's guessing again, you know, and I think it was two girl, two boy, or three girl, two boy. I don't remember exactly, but we, you know, nobody knew. You don't know how this is going to come out. So we're in there waiting, and Joe texts us. Now, here's the funny thing. You know, we're all sitting in the waiting room. We're on our phones texting away like a bunch of teenagers, looking up the news and seeing what's going on. And, you know, I'm checking my Twitter to see what you guys and girls are doing out there and chasing Justice Land. And all of a sudden, I get a text from my son, Joe, with a picture of him. And he's like, hey, they tell me as soon as they call me in, it'll be 15 minutes and you'll be a grandfather. And I'm like, well, this is great. Okay, so now I'm looking at the clock. And it's probably 8:15, 8:30, 8:45, 9 o'clock, 9:15. Now, what you thought was going to be like a quick half an hour starts to turn into an hour. And now you start to get nervous. Like, what's going on? You know, there was a reason that we had a C-section with this little baby, which I'm not going to go into, but, you know, there was some concerns. There were some concerns. And you start to get into an hour, and all of a sudden, you could just feel the excitement that was in the room begin to moderate a little bit. Like, uh-oh, what's going on here? Why is this taking an hour when, you know, Joe said 15 minutes? We figured, okay. And you start to think about how important this little baby is, you know, just as a loving, sweet human being coming into our family. And you could feel, it was a palpable feeling in the room that everybody was worried about Adeline and worried about, you know, little baby Thumper. You know, what's going on back there? So probably around 9:15, 9:20, we had all kind of, you know, our energy had been, you know, worn out of us. And now we're kind of maybe a little concerned what's going on. But nobody said anything. You know, we kept it all up, you know, smiling. And then all of a sudden, Joe texts and he goes, hey, everything's good. We'll be going good in a couple minutes, right? Well, from where we were sitting, we could see the hallway. And all of a sudden, here comes this gurney with a nurse. And Adeline wasn't on the gurney, so we didn't know where she was. But I realized it was my son, Joe, and he turns around and looks at us in the room, gives us a thumbs up with this big, giant smile on his face. So Kathleen and I, we jump up, run into the hallway because we realize it's Joe. And we're like, Joe, how's everything? He goes, it's great. It's great. Everybody's good. Addie will be done in a couple minutes. And all of a sudden, we didn't even see the little baby sitting there. The nurse picks up this little bundle and holds up this little baby. My heart, I can't tell you what a wonderful feeling that was to see this little baby. And of course, you know, as the grandfather, as Joe's father, I'm scanning that little baby. I'm looking, is there anything wrong? Is there any problem that caused this time delay? And this little baby was pink and perfect and just beautiful with a little cap on her head. I mean, just adorable. But they didn't put a bow on the cap. It was just a plain old cap because the nurses all knew. We still didn't know if it was a boy or girl. And we wanted to know right then and there. And Joe says, listen, Addie wants to tell you when she comes out of the operating room. So we're not telling you nothing. We're going back to the room. We'll call you in a few minutes. So you see how this is just playing out and playing out. So we go back. Well, at least we know the baby's healthy. Mom is healthy. Everybody is good. And that was all I had prayed for. All I had prayed for throughout their entire pregnancy was that boy, girl, didn't make a difference. What I really wanted was a healthy baby. And I prayed. It's the only thing I knew to do. You know, it's a funny thing when you're a grandparent and you don't have that direct control. You know, when it was me and it was my wife, I was involved with the doctor visits. I was involved with the things around the house. I was involved with learning about, you know, whatever was going on with the pregnancy. But when you're the grandfather and the grandmother, you're not directly related into that situation. It's, you know, it's their thing. And I was worried for my son. I was worried for my daughter-in-law. You know, what if there was a problem with the baby? You know, how many thousands and thousands of people have to deal with problems all the time? And it's not easy. I mean, even my own beautiful, sweet daughter, Marisa Joy, she had a problem with her liver when she was born. She had to have surgery when she was 10 days old, right? Now she's a perfect, perfect 20-year-old and everything. And that was good. But that was very difficult. And this is what I was worried about. But as I'm looking at that beautiful, beautiful little baby sitting there, and you start to realize that it didn't even matter. I prayed so hard and so much for just normal, healthy baby. But I was willing to accept whatever God sent our way, you know, and that was a hard place for me to get to. It was a hard place for me to get to because, my kids work hard. Kathleen and I work hard. We do the right thing. We do right things. And I know that doesn't have really anything to do with how your life turns out, pretty much. You know, I mean, it goes the way it goes. God's not controlling. Well, here, let me throw something bad at you, and I'll throw something good at you. And then, oh, you over there, boom, let's hit you with this. God doesn't do that to you. Pretty much the world goes the way the world goes, and God's here with you to help you through it. But you're supposed to react the way you're supposed to react and do the right thing, even in the face of difficulty. So I was prepared. Whatever came our way, we were going to love and cherish this beautiful little baby, no matter what. And I was so happy to see that my prayers apparently had been answered. I don't deserve that, but I know Joe and Adeline and little baby Annalisa Grace, they deserve that. So thank you, God, for helping us and having this beautiful, pink little, perfect little baby. It's really wonderful. Now, juxtapose that to a very good friend of mine who has a little boy who's probably, 7 or 8 years old. Perfect little boy, doing everything little boys do. And him and his mom and dad are really very nice people, vivacious, outgoing, really happy, wonderful people. And mom got pregnant, and they're in the middle of the pregnancy, and they just found out, I guess the baby's about 4 months old. 4 months old. Yeah, it hasn't been born yet. 4 months in utero. The baby's in, and it is a baby, by the way. It's a baby that's in there. It's not a clump of cells. It's not a could be. It's not a tree or a plant that could go 19 different ways. It's a baby that's inside the mama there. And they just found out that this little angel baby has cystic fibrosis. And these young people are devastated because they don't know what this means for their child, what it means for their family, what it means for their world. And this is really, really difficult for lots and lots of people. But they said probably one of the hardest things I had heard anybody ever say. You know, here on Chasing Justice and a lot of conservatives, we often talk about, you know, the right to life, and we support life and we do this and that. And then we find a moment when it's hard to do that, when it's difficult to do that. And you can understand how people can waver. You can understand how people can see a different option for themselves. But this young man who I really I really like this young man. We were talking about it, and I was telling him about my daughter's problems when she was born and how Kathleen and I worked our way through it and how we prayed our way through it, and we had family and friends around us, and we got through it. And he said, yeah, he goes, it's really scary. You know, we're trying to learn about the disease and what we can do to help the baby. He goes, and, you know, I talked to my wife, and a lot of our friends are telling us, why don't you abort this baby? You know, why don't you abort this baby? Why would you put the baby through that and put yourselves through that? You know, this is really a hard road, and you can try again and have another baby. He goes, and we thought about it, and we just can't do it. We're not going to do it. We're going to have the baby. We're going to love this baby because God sent us this baby, and we're going to have the child. Now, that puts the whole right to life, life at all costs, life is always good, into the question hopper. Now, I'm not putting it there because I've worked my way through this myself personally, but to see someone else going through that, looking, okay, here we have a choice. We have a quick medical procedure, and this baby that has this debilitating disease, this, you know, potentially life-threatening disease, cystic fibrosis, can have a really hard time, really hard life. We can end that. Why would we do that to our son and to our family and to that little baby? We can just put an end to it and move on. And they decided not to. They decided that life was important, that life is a gift from God, and they are going to move forward, and they are going to love that baby, and they're going to take care of that baby for as long as that baby's life is. Whatever that means, they're going to do that. And I think in there is the lesson about life. You know, I look at that and I say how hard that must be to be faced with that. And I know lots of people are faced with that, and they make the other choice. They take the, you know, what you would say would be the logical choice. You know, why would you have a baby that has all these problems when you could just end that pregnancy, feel bad about that, and have a baby that's perfectly healthy and doesn't have problems, right? But it's all about the value of life. Do we value life? Yes or no? And everyone has to work themselves through this. I'm not going to sit here and be in judgment of anybody. Everyone has to make their own. All I can tell you is that when I see beautiful baby Annalisa Grace and I see the glory of God in that little child and the love that she is surrounded with, I know that life is the right choice. I'm Lieutenant Joe, and we'll be back with round three here on Chasing Justice.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Welcome back. Here we are at round three of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, I want to say thank you to all of you who listen. You know, I know you can do a lot of things during this hour every weekday, Monday through Friday, 3 o'clock. You could be listening to other shows. You could be doing other things. But I really appreciate that you settle down in this hour with me and you spend some time. You know, sometimes it's pointed things that I want to talk about. Sometimes it's just things that are going on in the world. Sometimes it's just kind of stream of consciousness. I enjoy it. I enjoy the time to, you know, vet out some of the things that I'm thinking and what goes on in my head and how I feel about the world. And this is a really a great way to do it. I've had tremendous fun bringing on the neighborhood guys. You know, And we're going to be having them on more and more regular again. You know, when we first started here in Chasing Justice, that was a one-segment little bite of the show. And then next thing you know, it was such a good segment, we went to, you know, a segment and a half, two segments. I've done complete shows with the guys in the neighborhood. We've done individual interviews with the guys in the neighborhood. We do a lot of skits. We do some funny stuff, some serious things. But it's really turned into a great expression for us here. And having your feedback is really, really awesome. And I do want to thank you for spending this hour every weekday with me and with the guys in the neighborhood when they're on. And it's a privilege, and I don't want you to think I don't realize how great of a privilege it really is for me to do this. So how can you do good with what you've been given? All right? This is another thing that I'm constantly, I don't want to say struggling with, but I'm constantly trying to find an outlet with. You know, there's an old saying, you know, to those who've been given a lot is expected. And I believe that. I don't think that's a government thing to enforce. Hey, you make a billion, you're going to give a lot more than everybody. I don't think that's a government thing to do. I think that's an individual thing to do. And if you do better in life, you know, trying to help other people, I think is a good thing. I'm not going to say it's the right thing to do, because you might not think it's the right thing to do. And who am I to tell you it is the right thing to do? What I'm saying is, for me personally, I feel that it is an appropriate thing to do. That if there's something for me to do, then I will try and do it. And that really is kind of the way I do look at it. You know, for me personally, as I rose in the ability to earn money, you know, because money, a lot of things come down to money, you know. You know, you got enough money to make your bills, that's great. You got enough money to help your children, that's great. You got enough money to do the things you need to do. And then you got some extra money. What are you going to do with it? I mean, save it, of course. You need to save it for the future. You got to look for your future. But, you know, are there people in need around you? Are there people who could use something, a little bit? Doesn't have to be a lot. It can be something. You know, and this is the philosophy that we take here in my house, is that, okay, we have a little bit of extra. Not a lot, believe me. It's not a lot. But there's a little bit of extra in most months, you know, and what are we going to do with that? And one of the things that we often try and do is we act locally. You know, there's people here that need our help. You know, there's people that need help locally, so we seek out those things. A lot of them are through our local church. You know, we find out who needs help and we do things. One of the things that I did donate to, because I really wanted to, because I got to be honest with you, their commercials were great. They got to my heart, and every time I saw them, I said, I have got to donate to that, and I just never got around to it. The one day I said to Kathleen, do me a favor, write a check, please, and send it to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. You know those commercials with that little boy who says, you know, he's got the cutest little voice, and you get a blanket for showing how much you love people like me. We love people like you. I mean, he's the most cutest, adorable little boy. And you can see what a smart, intelligent young fella. And he had some difficulty. And these kids get saved at this hospital. It doesn't cost the parents anything to go there. You know, I was saying earlier that my daughter had a problem, and we were younger at the time. You know, I was a young cop. We didn't have a lot going on financially. I was just working the road, doing the best I could, and we had to go to Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, and my wife and I had to stay there for several weeks at a time, you know, with my daughter. And go ahead, try and stay in a hotel every single night in Philadelphia. That's a very expensive prospect. So we ended up staying at Ronald McDonald House. Yes, that's a real place. I know a lot of you probably have been to the local Ronald McDonald House around you, but I saw that, you know, the drive-through when I was a kid. Oh, sure, it's Ronald McDonald House. Well, this was a real godsend to, I couldn't believe how many people. In Philadelphia, it is a big old mansion, and it's absolutely a gorgeous physical building. But they added on to it over the years. There's quite a few rooms, but it is a refuge for people who have to have their children at that hospital, and they can't afford to do $150, $200 every single night for months at a time, right? You can run yourself into absolute financial ruin by doing that if you have the money to spend to begin with. If you don't have credit cards that have stuff on it, how are you supposed to stay there in the first place? So Ronald McDonald House, I think at the time they were charging everybody that stayed there like $5 a night. And that included a breakfast, you know, your basic scrambled eggs and bacon or sausage. And then there was a sandwich in the afternoon if you happen to be around at sandwich time. And then there was a late dinner was served. And people in the community would bring in the food. You know, there was people that would bring plates of stuff, and they would make some things at the house. You know, they had a kitchen staff. But all of this was on donations. That's what made this actually work. And they charged you $5 or $10 a night to stay there. And that was something you could do. It was interesting. You were given a job. You know, one of the things I know lots of people would feel, you know, gee, staying there, how can I stay? I got to do something. So they actually give you a job. Me, my job was to vacuum the first floor. So I went to the closet and I took out the vacuum in the morning before we went to the hospital, and I vacuumed the whole first floor, and I put the vacuum away, and I felt like I was doing something for my keep there. But I got to tell you what a wonderful, wonderful place it was. And we were lucky. You know, my daughter had a problem and it was scary, but we had great doctors. There were people there whose children were really in a bad way. There were people there whose children did not survive whatever it was that was affecting them. And they were in that house too, you know, and we tried to bolster each other. So it was a human connection place. And this is where I'm saying, if you have extra, do a little extra. It's a good thing to do because you really don't know all the people that it's going to help. So that's my soapbox to lead up to this. You know, as a police officer, and I write, you know, I write not just for America Out Loud, but I write for Blue Magazine. I write for the FBI Worldwide Magazine. I write for Autism Parenting Magazine. I write for lots of different magazines. And you get contacted by a lot of different people. I'm on, you know, my Facebook presence is out there for, you know, my company and for all these things. Well, 5 or 6 years ago, I had somebody come on and want to be my friend, you know, on my police business, police training thing, you know, Pangaro Training. Before it became True Security Design, it was just Pangaro Training, which that's still there on Facebook. You can still go see Pangaro Training, and you can see some of our videos we did up and stuff. So it's fun. It's a fun site. But I had this young man jump on, and he is from New Hampshire. And I, you know, his messages were nice. Hey, I read your article. That was really cool. Do you know Bernie Kerik, or do you know this one or that one? And, you know, I'm saying, okay. And he's asking me some questions. And I don't really do personal things on social media. I don't talk about personal things. I talk about business and, you know, police stuff. And I just thought I got something out of the questions that just the way this young man was asking. I said, hey, how old are you? And he says, I'm 21. I said, oh, you're 21. That's great. And what do you do? And he says, I work, you know, part-time. I think it was like at Kmart or something like that. And I said, oh, okay, that's great. And, you know, what, you like law enforcement? I love the police. I think the police and the state troopers and the FBI guys and girls are the greatest in the world, and they keep our country safe. And he went through this whole response on this thing. And I started to say, I wonder if there's something more with this young man. Well, long and short of it, you know, once you become a friend with somebody, you start to see their pictures and they see your pictures and stuff. And I see this young man is becoming an honorary New Hampshire State police officer. And he's a special needs young man. Really, really a warm and friendly and nice young man. But he loves the cops. And he loves cop stuff. And the troopers in New Hampshire have taken to this young man. And they've, you know, they got him a uniform. And he's 21 years old. You know, he's 21 years old. But he's a wonderful, special member of our community. Well, one of the things, I think I commented when I saw one of his pictures, he asked me, he goes, hey, do you have any police patches? Do you have any police patches? And I'm saying, yeah, why do you? He goes, yeah, I love police patches. So I said, okay, now I know who this young man is. He's on the spectrum. He's a nice guy, and he likes police stuff. So I went and I found some police patches, local, you know, PDs, and I mailed them to the kid, right? Well, he was so thrilled to get them. And he says, hey, do you have anything else like that? Now, I know kids on the spectrum, they don't hold back. You know, this kid liked these things. He wanted to know, hey, is there any more of that? And I said, sure. So I would go to a police show, you know, one of these police expos, and you're looking at, you know, new guns and new cars and new equipment and all that stuff. And there's always somebody there that's got patches. They're always trading patches. Or you can buy, like, real cool patches from departments that you never, you know, you'd never be around and stuff. And this one guy was selling police patches, I don't know, for a dollar a piece or something. So I bought, like, 20 of them. I said, hey, give me the coolest ones, Oklahoma, LAPD, you know, San Francisco PD, SWAT team, all this stuff. So I bought about 20 of these things. And I come home with them, and Kathleen says to me, what are you doing? Are you collecting patches now? I said, no, I'm not collecting patches. I'm sending them to my friend up in New Hampshire. And she goes, oh, well, why don't you do this? He gets so excited to get these patches. Why don't you put two in an envelope, address 10 envelopes, and like every 10 days, mail him an envelope. This way we sent him something showing up at the house. It's exciting. He can see the patches. I said, that's a great idea. So that's what I did. I put two patches in a thing with a little note, and like every other week I would send out an envelope. And he was thrilled to get these patches. So then I'd write an article in Blue Magazine, and I would get the hard copy. You know, they mail you a copy when you're an author. So they send me a copy of it. So you know what I did? I took the magazine. I mailed the magazine to the kid. And he was thrilled, and he comes back and he says, hey, I have a friend of mine who collects patches and magazines too. Do you have any more of those you could send to him? So you could see how this could really expand, right? But I got to tell you, it was a beautiful and wonderful thing to send this stuff to this kid. So that's what I'm reaching out to you, my friends, here in Chasing Justice Land. I look for patches all the time, but I know a lot of you are in law enforcement, know people in law enforcement, first aid, fire departments, all that kind of stuff. If you have a patch laying around that you can send to me, I'm going to forward it to this young man in New Hampshire, all right? My friend Nate, he's really a cool young man. So the place that you could send it, I'll give you an address of my office. You can mail it to my office. I'll collect them all up there, and then I can ship them out to the young man, you know, a couple at a time, all right? If you have a police patch or a fireman patch or an EMT patch, send it to care of Lieutenant Joe at 1490 North Clinton Avenue, Bayshore, New York, 11706. All right, that's care of Lieutenant Joe, 1490 North Clinton Avenue, Bayshore, New York, 11706. Any kind of a police, EMT, fireman patch, anything like that. If you could send it to me, I will pass it on to Nate, and you'll be making somebody happy. See, it's something we can do, right? It's something we can do. It's a simple thing. This simple little pleasure gives this kid so much pleasure, that, and he likes the police so much, and we need that now, don't we? You know, my brother and sisters that are out there listening, don't we need support from anywhere? And a young man who thinks you are all awesome, we can give him a patch, right? So if you can help me out, send me that patch. That would be great, and I'll pass it on to Nate. I will probably tweet out that address at some point. You'll see that on a tweet of an address where you can send it. So if you didn't copy it down when I said it, I'll send it out again. It's really a great thing. So while we have politics that's driving us all crazy, and literally it's driving us crazy, I wanted to do something a little bit different today. I wanted to talk about some other things. I wanted to talk about good things like baby Annalisa Grace. And I wanted to talk about, you know, my friend Nate in New Hampshire. And you and me, you know, we can't just spend our whole lives going crazy over politics, especially when our politics is completely and totally broken. So we have to look at other things. We have to think about other things. And I thought these were a couple of good things for us to talk about. So if you're listening on the podcast, because you know the show goes to podcast, and you know, I've seen some people say they're going to drink their coffee when they listen to Lieutenant Joe. I think that is so awesome. That is really cool. I guess the last thing we can finish up on, you know, for this episode is when we talk here a lot about people who represent us, and the reason we have a representative republic and not a democracy is because there's so many big things to do. We need people to listen to what we say and then go do it. For us who are conservative or Republican or lean that way or don't lean Democrat, put it that way, you lean maybe to the other side, to the right of things. You know, Lindsey Graham has been somebody that's come up, I know how many times I've talked about Lindsey Graham and whether I trust him or I don't. He seems to be doing good things. He's got this resolution out there, a movement from the Senate to say what the Democrats are doing in the House of Representatives is a terrible thing. The way they are misusing their power to attack the president simply because they don't like him is so completely and totally inappropriate that they actually have senators that are doing. Now, there's 53 Republican senators, and I think so far 46 of them have signed up to condemn what the Democrats are doing. 46. That would leave what? Seven more? Where are those seven? All right. We got Mitt Romney, of course. Now, Mitt, why don't you know, if it wasn't for the fact that if he flipped over and went to the Democrats, I would not be surprised at all. That would show me his true weak backbone of a guy, which is so disappointing because I thought he would have been a good president. I really did. I thought he would have been good, but he's shown no backbone whatsoever. And if he flipped over and went to became a Democrat, I wouldn't be surprised. And then there's a couple others that are out there. You know, what are we supposed to do about these people? They're Republicans. You know, you're in a state where you have a Republican senator that's not doing the right thing. Not whether they like Trump or not, but what they're seeing the Democrats do in the Congress. Because you know what? The right thing is when the House flips back to us and there's a Democrat president, no matter whoever it is, we should start impeachment immediately. Whether we have something or not, we're going to have an inquiry, and everything that the person does, he or she, no matter what they do, we're going to start an impeachment proceedings. We're going to go after, subpoena everybody, and attack them until we can get them. Is that really where we want to go? Is that what we want to happen? How come all these Republicans aren't getting together, sticking together, and saying this is enough? And all of us have to think that too. So, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a whirlwind show. I hope it was a little bit different than the nonstop politics. We did talk a lot of politics, and I know I ended on it. But, you know, the part in the middle is what I liked today. Annalisa Grace, baby, welcome to the world. It's really a beautiful place. God, thank you so much for sending her to us. And I hope everybody out there that has family and friends has healthy, happy relationships. If you have a broken relationship, go fix it. You know, go call somebody on the phone and tell them you love them. If you got an extra dollar in your pocket, help somebody out who's hungry. We're all better for it. And isn't that really what justice is all about? Hey, until we meet again, I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, here on Chasing Justice, and we are on the America Out Loud Radio Network.